Good morning. I'd like to explain the need for this research. The Environmental Protection Agency, along with the states, is required to assess the national surface waters. And EPA, in order to do this, developed a very robust probabilistic method and located a number of stream and lake sites throughout the country and visited each site and applied uniform field procedures and collected a number of water quality indicators. The inference that can be reached from these water quality indicators nationwide is an assessment that, for example, could say how many lakes are in good conditions or how many miles of streams are in good or poor conditions, but it cannot tell where those conditions are. This is the subject of this research. I would like to make an explicit, spatially explicit predictions of where those streams are, where those conditions are. And I use several data nationwide databases, the soil database as well as the land cover databases. And also, of course, the water quality databases that EPA had developed, along with Omnic's ecological regions of the United States. I've already mentioned the purpose for this research. I want to walk you through the data and the model and to explain some critical calculations and the model so that you could see the hierarchy and capabilities of various predictors in the soil and land cover in trying to predict water quality. Namely, I would like to first of all present a table of the data. These things are not really matrix algebra, considered as a kind of graphic art, so that you just to be able to walk you through. Okay. And so after I actually give you the table and I show how you can get an average value for some of these quantities, and then this is a covariance matrix that that actually helps to calculate what is the key variable, and this is variance reduction. Variance reduction is a quantity, is a number that will help to tell you about the predictability of various water quality components. The other items I want to discuss is generalized square distance, which is actually a calculation to help you find the nearest neighbor to a watershed as far as the soil and land cover conditions are concerned. This is some idea about the scale of the database that I'll be using. And for example, Sergo database has more than a quarter of a million soil map units, and StatsCo less than 10,000 soil map units, and land cover, which has actually 30 meter pixels. I intersected the land cover with the soil map units, so that actually combined the land cover classes with the map units of StatsCo and Sergo. So that wherever there is a Sergo coverage in the country, you would use the Sorgo and the land cover, and when there is none, you just fill it up with the stat score. Then there are the number of watersheds that EPA actually established are 1,400 for streams and 1,200 for lake watersheds. And the ecoregions are either level 3, which is 84 levels, and then ecoregion level 4, which are 940 ecoregions. I meant to say 84 ecoregions at the level 3. The distinction between what the water quality units are is that these are discrete locations, whereas the soils as well as the ecoregions are continuous and cover the entire coast. This shows some examples of the type of soil characteristics and soil characteristic environments that I have selected from the soil and soil database and the land cover. So, for example, the texture and organic matter, as well as, say, frost-free days, and then land covers like evergreen forest and deciduous forest, and water quality indicators are pH and conductivity, acid neutralizing capacity, dissolved organic carbon, and stream conditions like the slope, the substrate, and taxi richness. These are the examples of the water qualities. This is the entire table. This is what I mean by graphic arts of it. So these are number of observations, which are the number of watersheds. There are 1,392 of them. And these are the water quality parameters, are 17 of them. And these things that are called SL, these are soil and land cover. And there are about 46 of them. They add up all to a P, which is 63 variables that I am dealing with. Now, if you take these variables, these observations, for example, and add them up, and divide them by the number of observation, you will get a value mean. And this bold U means this is a vector. So I have 63 mean values for this kind of thing. And of course, you can continue and do a standard deviation and variance calculation, just the stuff that we do every day. And this bold one is the variance matrix, which is this variance is actually diagonal of 64 by 64 matrix that makes the bulk of the information that we use in any model after this. And this one is a symbol for all the covariance matrix. This is the variance covariance matrix. So these are the diagonal stuff, and these are the covariances that are symmetric. So there are 63 squared on them. Now, I'm going to summarize this thing into much more manageable graphic by partitioning it. So if you draw a line downward this way and downward that way, you isolate this group, and I call this one sigma 2-2. That means this is a square matrix. And this square matrix has 62 by 62 elements of the covariance. These are the wing matrices that actually correlate all these predictors with the predicted. So this is the variable that represents the predicted. Okay? So you'd have two matrices. This is a predicted, and this is a predictor. And this is the correlation between them. Okay, so just remember a picture of this thing, that it's a correlation kind of thing, and I'm going to show you where it comes in, say, an example of a regression. So suppose you have x1 to xp, like 63 different variables. You take one of them up and say, I said, this is what I want to predict. And these are the predictors. x2s to xp's are predictors. The b's are the slopes. So we are familiar with this type of arrangement. And B0 is a kind of a misfit type of calculation that you have to calculate it after you calculate the B's. And the way you calculate the means is just a weighted average of all the other ones multiplied by their means, subtracted from the sample mean of the predicted. It gives you B0. And as far as the B's are concerned, these are actually a product, each slope is a product of two numbers. One is the correlation of the, all the predictors with the predicted, and the other one is the inverse. And the inverse, example of an inverse is that if you had just one predictor, the matrix 2 by 2 is actually the variance of sample variance. And the inverse of it is 1 over the sample variance. But when you have lots of dimensions, it will become much more complicated. And you need the help of a computer. Now, if you actually, this is the origin of the independent variable at the zero. And if you actually make the origin reference to every mean values, for example, x2 minus mu 2 be the origin, B0 disappears, and you would have this type of equation. Since x1 equals its own sample, and its own sample mean, the x1 differs from its own sample means by the magnitude of correlation that it has with the remaining predictors. Okay? So, but when you put the equation in this manner, you have actually described exactly the concept of conditional probability. So x becomes an expectation value, that is the conditional mean given its relationship with all the other predictors. And it is written in a symbolic way, exactly like what we did in this regression thing. You have this correlation kind, this gives you the slopes, and this gives you the inverse matrix. And these are the variables themselves. So this is exactly like this equation, but it's a kind of a quadratic surface. Now, so what is a conditional expectation? It differs from the mean sample value of this one by the amount of correlation that exists between the independent predictors and the predictor. The same definition can be also applied to the conditional variance. That is to say, a conditional variance is similar to the sample variance, except because of the magnitude of correlation it has with the other predictors. Usually, you hope that the conditional variance is smaller than the sample variance, because you will have a much more explanation. So I took those two numbers and made the index for them is called variance reduction. So variance reduction is a model's capability to predict the one that you the value that you want to predict. Okay. Now I'm going to be using this. These equations are actually checked various ways, and it is a very robust verification. Now I'm going to get all these 63 variables and show you the hierarchy of the way they can be predicted. There are three groups of them, and each group has a higher predictability than the other one. Okay, and what you see in here is actually a regression of the expected value, the mean, and the coefficients of this regression, and the observed value itself. You can see the very interesting relationship, a hierarchy of relationship between the water quality components and soil characteristics and land cover type of things. And so open waters, we didn't have too many open waters in there. So this is the least predictable. And the average predictability throughout this 21 item is about 36%. So this is lower than the mean. And fortunately, many of the water quality items fall in these categories. like this is the total taxile richness, this is the pH of the water, and this is the biological integrity using the taxa of the water, and this is the total suspended solid, and this is phosphorus, total phosphorus, and so on. And this one is the soil information. These are the ones in the green, soil information. That is cation exchange capacities. And this one in blue is a land cover. Like this is a woodland, and this is a space that is low developed, low degree of development. This is a barren. Let me see if I can. This is a barren. Okay. And of course, I'm giving also the detailed information about the predictability of this. For example, you can predict cation exchange capacity of the soil given all the other 62 parameters. And the variance reduction for that is about 40%, for example. And the regression coefficients A and B and R square values and relative errors are also given. This is a very detailed prediction of the entire fabric of entire list of predictors and predicted. Now the hierarchy of the relationships actually keep changing, and this one is for example like substrate in the stream, the 16 the one percentile away from the mean particle size in the stream. So we have a very rich type of database, and their predictability actually varies in different arrangement with the predictors. And for example, this one, the conductivity of the soil salt, not all of the water qualities were fully predicted. You will see conductivity is a sulfate, chloride, and this is the mean particle size of the stream. This is the acid neutralizing capacities. And this is the soil organic carbon and then and the other type of soil characteristics that you have. Now, this is the water quality indicators do not spatially, as I mentioned too, if I actually were trying to predict the water qualities by itself without just by using the land cover and the soil characteristic, you will have this type of variance reduction. They are all very poor. So you really need to use the first strategy, like in this one, in order to actually be able to predict the water quality. And because some of the water quality parameters can be predicted better than others, in order to improve the predictability of those that are difficult, you actually make a joint prediction of more than one. So this is an example of conductivity and the median particle size that helps to predict the biological integrity. The biological integrity was low, but when you jointly predict it, it improves the prediction. And the algorithm that I showed you facilitates this type of thing very easily. And this one now is a sixth prediction of six quantities together. And in order to show you how actually this joint prediction helps the poor predictors to come up, and I showed the details of this prediction. So this is conductivity, which is very good predicted. And then the dissolved organic carbon and this and the particle size in the stream, these are pretty good ones. And for example, the total richness, taxa richness is poor one. And you can see these are the slope of the lines, and these show a certain bias. So essentially what the joint prediction does, it robs from the rich Peter and gives it to Paul and brings them all up into in a level like what you saw in the other, like this one. The slope becomes this one. So you improve the prediction. Now, this type of prediction was obtained by by a set aside. You take one watershed and don't don't use it in building the model, and you use the rest of the 1,391 watersheds to build the model, and then predict this one. And you repeat that 1,392 times in order to produce this category. Now, I'm going to repeat this prediction again. In the next one, I will use the neighbor of the watershed, not the watershed itself, but purposely use the neighbor of the watershed in order to see the prediction. And this is the way that actually uses the soil square distance, that is to say, soil characteristic square distance. And you'll see that the prediction of this one for the same type of thing are not all that far different from the one that you saw. Now, this actually is for all the soil map units of the United States. And this is an example of how all soils of map units of the United States, the total richness of them, superimposed on ecoregion level 3. And my conclusion is that it is possible to predict if you have a co-predictors, but we need to do a little more work with respect to the neighbor, the nearest neighbor. Thank you very much.